This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:19 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. But in the meantime, we're looking at lessons that we can learn from the crisis in Sri Lanka. With $51 billion accumulated in foreign debt, Sri Lanka is now facing an unprecedented economic crisis since independence in 1948. On Wednesday this week, the Prime Minister announced that the country's economy has completely collapsed. And yesterday, we spoke to policy analyst Dr. Chulani Atanayake of the National University of Singapore. She described the dire situation for the 22 million population island. You can listen to that conversation by looking up the podcast Sri Lanka's Economy in Collapse on the BFM app.
Now, since the onset of the crisis in Sri Lanka, observers have drawn parallels with the structural economic issues in Malaysia that also could lead us down a similar path. Political figures like Lim Kit Siang have urged the public to learn from the failed state to avoid the same trajectory in a few decades' time, if not sooner. Now, once the jewel of South Asia, what went wrong in the economic development story of Sri Lanka, and what are some of the biggest lessons that Malaysia can learn?
For some reflections on this, we speak to P. Gunasegaram, independent business writer. Guna, good morning. Always good to have you. Now, are there any lessons that Malaysia should take heed of from Sri Lanka's crisis? Do you see parallels between our countries that highlight our vulnerabilities?
It's not really a fair comparison when you compare Sri Lanka and Malaysia. Sri Lanka's economy has collapsed. They don't have enough reserves. Just US dollars 1.9 billion versus ours of US 116 billion. Huge difference there. Their trade balance is negative US dollars 8 billion. Ours is a positive US dollars 63 billion. Their debt's 101% of GDP. Ours 68%. Mm. They don't have enough foreign exchange to service their debts. So in short, we are not anywhere near what Sri Lanka is now. A Moody's rating for Sri Lanka is C, small A, and A3 for Malaysia. So even none of the rating agencies think that Malaysia is in grave danger at this point of time. And also Sri Lanka made the really bad move of banning fertilizer imports and relying instead on organic fertilizers, which resulted in a major shortage of food production locally. Mm. So are we vulnerable? Yes, if we go on like this for a long time, it may take a decade of mismanagement and corruption to get there, and it would need successive bad governments. Our quality of government right now is the poorest it has ever been. So, yes, we could be headed that way if we continue like this. But right now, we are not anywhere near as bad as Sri Lanka. So let's make no mistake about that.
That's a very good point, Guna. But, you know, when we look at Sri Lanka, many people have also highlighted their government spending on food, fuel and electricity subsidies as one of the factors that caused this crisis. We, too, spend a large amount on subsidies. In your assessment, is this going to be a major issue for us? Should we look at reforming this?
Okay. Our situation is totally different with respect to food and fuel. We are net exporters of energy, so we can afford to subsidize energy. Sri Lanka is not. Mm. The problem is who we are subsidizing when we subsidize energy. And the consensus view on that is that these are high energy consumers who tend to be rich. So that's the wrong thing to do. For food, we are also doing the wrong thing. The latest move was really bad by removing subsidies and lifting ceiling prices on chicken, eggs and cooking oil. So chicken and eggs are the mainstay proteins for many Malaysians because the price of other meats and fish has gone up so much and beyond the affordability levels. But the government figures themselves show that the subsidy on these food items is less than 1 billion per year. But what is the subsidy on fuel? It's 30 billion. It's estimated to be 30 billion by the finance minister for this year. So if we just cut that subsidy by just 3% or so, and we easily cover the food subsidy for those three essentials that we talked about now, chicken, eggs, and cooking oil. So really, the food subsidies don't do much damage and help to feed the poor. It gives them nutrition. No? Mm. It's the fuel subsidy that we need to watch because much of it goes to the rich who can afford to pay more. So in the longer term, we need to gradually decrease subsidies and give targeted help to the poor. As well, we need to be more self-sufficient in food to insulate ourselves from supply disruptions. So let me say this, we are not feeding our children properly. UNICEF figures indicate that in Malaysia, 20.7% of children, that's one in five, under 5 years of age, suffer from stunting, and 11.5% from wasting, while 12.7% of children are obese. These are not flattering figures at all. We are far away from being developed in the full sense of the word. That's why food subsidies are essential at this point in time.
Okay.
Where are the poor going to get their protein if we are going to increase the price, or we are going to allow the price of chicken to go up by as much as 35%?
We hear you when it comes to the food subsidies, but let's talk about the petrol subsidies. Like you say, you know, there is some inequality there because it does serve the rich a little bit more advantageously. But I'm curious, you know, when we look at how governments push ahead with any reform, everybody wants to be popular, everybody wants to be voted in, right? And I think that was the accusation hurled at the Sri Lankan government, that they didn't want to actually change too much because they wanted to implement populist measures. Are we at risk of doing the same thing here?
I think we are in a much better position economically. So that makes a huge difference. As I mentioned, we're net exporters of oil. So the oil price rise does not affect us as much, you know. So since we are net exporters of oil, the increase in oil price actually benefits us on a net-to-net basis. But the issue is, why do you want to subsidize oil when the oil users are basically on the rich side? They are not the poor. You know, if the poor use motorbikes, then a very small targeted subsidy to them will more than offset the increase in the price of oil. So that is the situation. You know, it's a matter of which you choose to subsidize at this point in time. In the longer time, you can talk about removing subsidies and going towards targeted direct help through cash to cash grants and so on. But if you remove price controls which are already there, then you can have a major price pressure, as happened in 2008 when we let the oil price increase rather sharply.
Right. I think I would summarize your points on how Malaysia is handling with the subsidies at the moment as a penny wise and pound foolish, perhaps. Very quickly, Guna, we've got about a minute left on the clock. I do want to get your thoughts on one of the factors that contributed to the downfall of Sri Lanka. Some observers have said it's really down to nepotism by President Rajapaksa and his family. They've held key positions in government for a long time. They're spread all across the government machinery. How can we avoid this in Malaysia, given that we too have our political dynasties holding sway over the landscape?
I think we don't have nearly as much nepotism here as in Sri Lanka, where at one time the Rajapaksa family controlled most key ministries. But what is worrisome here is the increasing corruption and patronage at all levels of society. So it has reached such levels that it's no longer a shame to be corrupt. For example, the moniker Malu Apa Bosku. You know, so when criminals and to-be criminals are glorified and given a high place and respect within the ruling party, we have to be really, really worried. That indicates the leadership and even the party itself is rotten. So the trend is nothing less than dangerous. And the only way you can overcome this is to exercise your right at the time of voting. So that's the only way that you can change the situation.
Guna, thank you very much for speaking to us. That was P. Gunasegaram, independent business writer, commenting on the parallels between Malaysia and Sri Lanka, making the case that Malaysia is in a good position at this moment.
We are not anywhere near Sri Lanka.
But if mismanagement occurs over the next decade, it's not impossible for us to go down this path. So we should take note. We're coming up to 7:29 in the morning. We're heading into the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, we're going to discuss the outlook for oil markets and how this is impacting Asia Pacific downstream players. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.